everybody, once again. My name is Glenn. I'm one of the pastors here at Grace. Today we're continuing our sermon series called A New Heart, and it's a study in an Old Testament book called Ezekiel. And because Ezekiel has 48 chapters, it would take us months and months to go through it all. So what we've been doing is taking a bird's eye view of it and hitting some important things and going from chapter to chapter and skipping some chapters and skipping some stories. We've zipped right through this book, and today we're bringing ourselves to chapters 33 and 34. Can you believe it? Has anybody been reading any of Ezekiel? Just raise your hand if you've been reading Ezekiel. And as you raise your hand, you're shaking your head going, crazy stuff, right? Because there's some unusual things. But we're going to talk about today some of those unusual things, because what I realized is as we were going through and jumping from chapter to chapter, we're missing some of the words that God told Ezekiel to say, and some of the things actually that God told Ezekiel to do. And we're going to do what is called like the Cliff's Notes version of this review from chapters 1 through 32. Everybody remember what Cliff's Notes are? Anybody here? Okay, Cliff's Notes are like when they assigned you to read Grapes of Wrath in high school, and it was 434 pages long, and you had 1 week left to do it, you still hadn't read it, so you went out and bought Cliff's Notes, and it was a summary of what that big story was. Today, that's what we're going to do. I'm going to just give you a summary, next 10 minutes or so, from chapters 1 right through chapter 32, just to see about this guy named Ezekiel and what he was all about. So, Ezekiel was a guy in his mid-20s. He was studying to be a priest, and he was living in a city called Jerusalem. We've heard of Jerusalem before. That was the capital of Israel, the nation of Israel and the people of Israel. When he was around 25 years old, a country named Babylon came, attacked Jerusalem, looted the place, took all the riches out of the temple, took all the riches out of the rich people's homes, and then they captured 10,000 people and brought them back 500 miles away to their hometown. Ezekiel was among them. Chapter 1 finds Ezekiel sitting by a river, and God speaks to him through a vision. And this is the kind of, this is an artist's rendition of the vision that Ezekiel had. He sees this dark cloud coming from far away, and inside the dark cloud, there are these strange-looking creatures, four of them, and they have four wings each, and they have four heads each, and they, each of the heads we found in chapter one, I mean, in our first message here, we discovered what these heads and what these wings represented. But just know this, it was an unusual vision, and it came to Ezekiel in Babylon, and it's not so much what was in the vision and what it means or what it represented. It was this fact that God shows up in Babylon. Because the Israelites of the day believed that only God could live and dwell in the temple in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, as we know, had been taken over. So they thought that God had abandoned them. But they came, God came, and he shows himself in this vision to Ezekiel. And he says this, Ezekiel, I want you to be my prophet. And I want you to tell the people, I haven't abandoned them. They've abandoned me. They've turned their backs on me. And they've broken the covenant. Remember the covenant what we talked about? We said that the covenant was like an if you, then I type of a covenant. If you follow me, then I will bring you favor. If you worship me only, then I will bless you as a nation. And because they broke the covenant of God in so many ways, as we've been discovering, God allowed them to suffer the consequences of their own sin. And thus, that's how they were captured here. The first 33 chapters of Ezekiel, God speaks to Ezekiel, and he gives him a job. This is what God's job for Ezekiel was. First of all, it was to be his mouthpiece. He said, I want you to speak only when I tell you to speak, and I want you to say only what I tell you to say. And then the next part of his job was to accuse Israel, to say, Israel, you've done this. You've broken the laws. You've turned your back, and to tell them the truth. And the third job was to warn them. And it was he was going to warn them that Israel had been given over their allegiance to false gods. And because of this, they were worshiping idols, and it led to rampant injustice and violence. And as a result, Ezekiel had to warn them that, hey, you have to turn your evil ways. You have to change your, there's a song like that, right? You gotta change your evil ways. brings me back to the 60s, I guess. So, see, they had to change their evil ways and turn, or else something was going to happen. So Ezekiel uses God's words, and then he uses some pretty unconventional actions to get his points across. And these are some of the stories that we've kind of skipped by and haven't touched upon here. We haven't been able to explore them because we're trying to cover so much in a short time. But here's some cliff notes version here. These actions that Ezekiel performed were called Ezekiel's sign acts. And what they were is kind of like a street theater thing that God called Ezekiel to do. He called him to go out and do things publicly to call attention to what God would want to say. One of these acts, he was supposed to build a tiny model of Jerusalem and play like war with it, have a battlefield and have the horses attack the walls and everything like that. Kind of like what some of us used to do when we were kids. Remember the little Green Army men? We used to set those up in the dirt and create a battlefield and use sticks and build forts, and then we'd throw rocks at each other's soldiers, the last one standing won. So Ezekiel was doing this type of thing to be able to show the people, hey, this is what's happening to Jerusalem. And this is what's going to happen. It's going to be completely wiped out unless you turn. And then he did this. He had Ezekiel shave off all of his hair, weigh it, and split it in thirds. One third of it he had him burn publicly in front of people. The other third, as you can see by this picture here, he had him chop up with a sword, just to chop up and throw at people. And the third thing he did was he had them scatter it all to the wind so that it would just blow. And this was significant of what was going to happen to Jerusalem too. And another thing he had him do was and this is probably the most extreme thing, he had him play the role of a scapegoat that was found on the Day of Atonement in the Jewish religion. The scapegoat was this symbolic way that the people's sins went onto this goat, and they sent that goat out into the desert. And God said, Ezekiel, I want you to play that role. And I'm going to have you be tied up every day. I want you to go out in public, lay down on your side, tied up, and I want you to just preach my word, and I want you to eat only food cooked over human dung. Now that's the second time in 2 weeks that we've talked about weird things that God expected Ezekiel to do with human dung. But the reason is this. He said, I want to show these people this is what their worshiping idols is like to me. What they're eating, I told them not to eat, they're defiling me. What they're doing, I told them not to do, they're defiling me. And it's like poop to me is what he was saying. And it was symbolic of that. So Ezekiel went out and did all of these things before the people, telling them to turn, change your ways. But the worst thing that God told him was this, for Ezekiel's sake at least. He said, I'm going to have you do all of these things, and no one is going to listen to you. I would throw up my hands and say, why? Then why? What's the use of it? But Ezekiel was faithful, and he went, and he kept preaching God's word for about a year. No one turns. After about a year, God gives Ezekiel another vision, and this is the vision that we talked about last week. This was the vision of the temple in Jerusalem, and Ezekiel sees these really creepy, crawly things in the temple, and he sees people, the leaders of Israel, worshiping this huge idol, and he sees over here all the ladies bowing down to a fertility god, and he sees all of this stuff, and he also sees the presence of God leaving the temple. And so he starts telling people about this. Now, the presence of God was leaving the temple, but it wasn't leaving the people of Israel, because in his vision, the presence of God was heading east to where Babylon was. So he's saying, listen, Ezekiel, I want you to tell these people that they have to stop worshiping God. And why? This is what we discovered last week, because he's a jealous God. Not jealous, not envious. Remember, we said not envious, because envy is wanting and desiring something that's not yours. But jealousy is protecting rightfully what is yours. And God is saying, listen, that I'm jealous of my holy name. There's no other God that has my name. I'm jealous of my people. No other God has my people. And I'm jealous of the worship of my people. No other God should be worshipped by my people. So he's telling them this. And here's the thing. This vision of God leaving the temple his vision. Ezekiel puts it into overdrive, and he starts calling and using other symbols, and he calls Israel a burning stick. He calls them an unfaithful, rebellious wife. He calls them a dangerous, roaring lion that's been tied up and captured. And he calls them two promiscuous sisters. And he keeps using these things to be able to get these points across that, listen, guys, you're going down the wrong path. Time to turn around. Pretty bleak, huh? If I left you right now and said, okay, go home, you'd all be walking all like this, right? Man, woe is me. I might as well eat worms, right? So, but there's more bad news to come here. And that's where we find ourselves now in Ezekiel chapter 33. Ezekiel is met by a refugee that comes from Jerusalem at the beginning of chapter 33. And this Israelite brings him some pretty bad news. He said, Babylon has attacked Jerusalem again, but this time the city has fallen, the temple has been destroyed completely, and all the people have scattered. Here we find, once again, God saying, okay, Zeke, I want you to speak to my people, and these are the words that I want you to hear. Listen to what God says in Ezekiel chapter 33, verse 10. Son of man, give the people of Israel this message. You are saying, our sins are heavy on us. We are wasting away. How can we survive? As surely as I live, says the Sovereign Lord, I take no pleasure in the death of wicked people. I only want them to turn from their wicked ways so that they can live. Turn. Turn from your wickedness, O people of Israel. Why should you die? You see what he's saying? He said, basically, I don't want this to happen. I love you. I want the best for you. You're my people. I have called you to myself. And if you would just come to me, none of this stuff would be happening. So turn, turn. But they still don't listen. Then down in verse 23, Ezekiel says this to the people. Son of man, the scattered, God says to tell them, son of man, the scattered remnants of Israel living among the ruined cities keep saying, Abraham was only one man, yet gained possession of the entire land. We are many. Surely the land has been given to us as a possession. The people are saying, hey, you blessed Abraham, and he was only one guy. You gave him all the land. So certainly, what about us? There's a bunch of us. How come we don't have this land? So God says this, tell the people, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. You eat meat with blood in it. You worship idols. You murder the innocent. Do you really think the land should be yours? Murderers, idolaters, adulterers, should the land be gone to you? Say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. As surely as I live, those living in the ruins will die by the sword, and I will send wild animals to eat those living in the open fields. Those hiding in the forts and caves will die of disease. I will completely destroy the land and demolish her pride. Her arrogant power will come to an end. The mountains of Israel will be so desolate that no one will even travel through them. When I have completely destroyed the land because of their detestable sins, then they will know that I am the Lord. Yowza. You see what happens here. The people are complaining, say, God, you've forgotten us. And he says, no, you have forgotten me. You have turned your back on me. You disobey my commandments. You eat things I tell you not to eat. You worship idols instead of worshiping me. You murder innocent people. And you think I should bless you? I don't think so. And what he does, he takes his blessing from them. And then all this evil starts happening to them. And they start suffering the consequences of their sin. It said their pride would be demolished and their arrogance would be wiped out. Why? It's because of this reason here. Then they will know that I'm the Lord. That was just a mouthful, guys, that I gave you. But here's the deal. Sometimes, actually oftentimes, God will allow us to suffer the consequences of our sin. Why is that? Because he loves us and he wants us to turn from that sin and turn toward him. Sometimes we go through a really difficult time and we start blaming God for it. We're saying, you don't love me. Why are you doing this to me? to me, and God is saying right back at you, I'm not doing this to you. You're doing it to yourself. And during those difficult times, sometimes we blame Satan, saying, oh, Satan's got a hold of me. He's doing this to me. And Satan is sitting back saying, hey, listen, I had nothing to do with this. You're doing a pretty good job of messing up your life yourself. And we keep trying to cast blame everywhere else. And I think that God allows us to hit bottom or to have a time of desperation. Sometimes, this isn't all the time, but sometimes, so that he can turn our attention toward him. I know it's happened to me. Does it happen to anybody else? A bunch of us. You get to the point where you hit bottom, your pride is demolished, your arrogance comes to an end, and you come to the end of yourself, and there's nowhere else to turn but to God. And that's the place that these people were here. And when we turn our hearts to him, he says to us, hey, I was here all along. I didn't desire this for you. Even though you forsook me, I didn't forsake you. Even though you turned your back on me, I didn't turn my back on you. In fact, I've been seeking after you. I've been calling out your name. I've been trying to get you to come back to me. If we turn the page in Ezekiel chapter 34, you can see the beginning of God's tenderness. Like, it's really interesting because for 33 chapters, we just keep seeing God warning and chastising the people. And then here, there's a turn. He's saying, okay, enough. And he says this right here. And this is, I'm doing this passage from the Message, which is a paraphrase of the Bible, because I think it does a really good job explaining what's happening here. Ezekiel says to the people, God, the Master, says, from now on, I myself am a shepherd, the shepherd. I'm going to go looking for them. As shepherds go after their flocks when they are scattered, I am going after my sheep. I'll rescue them from all the places that they've scattered to the storms. I'll bring them back from the foreign peoples, gather them from the foreign countries, and bring them back to their home country. I'll feed them on the mountains of Israel, along the streams, among their own people. I'll lead them into lush pastures, so that they can roam the mountain pastures of Israel, graze at leisure, feed in the rich pastures of the mountains of Israel. You see the picture that God is saying, I'm going to do all of this. And then he says this, I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. I myself will make sure they get plenty of rest. I'll go after the lost. I'll collect the strays. I'll doctor the injured. And I'll build up the weak ones and oversee the strong ones so that they're not. Do you see the contrast of the words here? Doesn't that sound comforting? And finally, I think Ezekiel being able to say these words is going, oh, about time. And he's saying, listen, God is saying he's going to go after the lost. He's going to collect the strays. He's going to doctor the injured. He's going to build up the weak ones. And this is for you. This is who I'm talking to, Ezekiel says. But how will this happen? When will this happen? Because it doesn't happen right away. This is the promise that God makes. Listen to what he says in verse 23 here. I will appoint one shepherd over them, my servant David. We're going to come back to that in a second. He'll feed them, he'll be their shepherd, and I, God, will be their God. My servant David will be their prince, and I, God, have spoken. What God is alluding to is he's saying, listen, you've had all of this trouble, all of this sin that you have had, but since the creation of the world, I've had something in mind. I've had this plan. I've had this plan that I was going to put into place. It's the antidote to all your badness, all your evil, all your sin, your rebelliousness. And it's this. It's the seed of David. It's someone that's going to come from the seed of David. David was a king of Israel, and his lineage led to who we call the Good Shepherd. We know who the Good Shepherd is, right? Jesus. And this Good Shepherd will come from David's lineage. And this is the shepherd that's going to collect the strays. This is the shepherd that's going to heal the injured and build up the weak ones. This is the shepherd that lays down his life for his sheep. God ends with these words here. You are my flock, the sheep of my pasture. You are my people, and I am your. reminds you of some words that Jesus spoke of himself, doesn't it? This is what Jesus said of himself. I am the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd that sacrifices his life for the sheep. The Jewish people of the day, of Jesus' day, if they had heard this, they would have known Jesus was referring to the prophecy in Ezekiel 34 that pointed to the good shepherd. Jesus had just finished talking about thieves and wolves coming in and destroying the flock. And he's saying, listen, I'm going to call the people back. And the sheep, they know my voice and they're going to follow me. And I'm going to heal them and bind them up. He's here to protect us, to love us, to draw us back to himself. And you know, it doesn't take us long as sheep to stray, does it? It really doesn't. We have our own way. We go off on our own sometimes. When I first became a follower of Jesus, I discovered this. I remember, I'm going to use words that maybe you're familiar with. I gave my life to Jesus. I said, I'm yours, Lord. And then about 2 weeks later, I find myself just turning and going down the wrong path, you know? And I come back and say, oh, Lord, I'm giving myself to you again. Go down the wrong path. That was 40 years ago. And it still happens to me today. 40 years ago, I penned the words to this song. It was one of the first songs that I wrote as a brand new Christian. It says, Father, the greatest gift that you could give to me was the day that you reached out to me and saved me from myself. Father, like a lamb, I had strayed from you, but you found me, and you helped me to return to the fold. And that's God's desire, day in, day out. He is continually seeking out the lost, the strayed, the weak, and he's calling us to him. Jesus told this parable here. I'm going to have the worship team come back up right now. Jesus told this parable right here. He said, if a man has 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others on the hills and go out and search for the one that's lost? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he will rejoice over it more than over the 99 that didn't wander away. In the same way, it's not my heavenly Father's will that even one of these little ones, you little ones, to perish. That's what Jesus is saying. So here's the big idea for the day we can leave with. We are stubborn, rebellious sheep. We stray. We screw up. We turn our backs on God like Israel did. We do put other false gods and idols before us like Israel did. And we pursue our own self-interest and we become stubborn just like Israel. But the good shepherd, he still loves you. He still calls you. He's still wanting you to come back to the fold, as we said here. He goes after the stray. This is what our role in all this is. You just need to hear his voice. You need to turn and follow him. That's it. No work. Just follow him. Listen to him. It reminds me of the song. We sing the song around here sometimes called Reckless Love. And the song, the chorus goes, oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. It chases you down, fights till you're found. It leaves the 99. You couldn't earn it. You don't deserve it. Still, he gives himself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. That love is pursuing you wherever you are, whatever you've done today. Let's pray.